Chapter 19. Another day spent wandering the city with the angel. Another dream of the woman standing at the foot of my bed. And I awoke finally, after all these years, to understand what Joshua must have felt, at least at times, as the only one of his kind. I know he said again and again that he was the son of man, born of a woman, one of us, but it was the paternal part of his heritage that made him different. Now, since I'm fairly sure I am the only person walking the earth who was doing so 2,000 years ago, I have an acute sense of what it is to be unique, to be the one and only. It's lonely. That's why Joshua went into those mountains so often and stayed so long in the company of the creature. Last night, I dreamed that the angel was talking to someone in the room while I slept. In the dream, I heard him say, "Maybe it would be best just to kill him when he finishes. Snap his neck. Shove him into a storm sewer." Strange, though. There wasn't the least bit of malice in the angel's voice. On the contrary, he sounded very forlorn. That's how I knew it was a dream. I never thought I'd be happy to get back to the monastery. But after trudging through the snow for half the day, the dank stone walls and dark hallways were as welcoming as a warmly lit hearth. Half of the rice we had collected as alms was immediately boiled, then packed into bamboo cylinders about a hand wide and as long as a man's leg. Then half of the root vegetables were stored away, while the rest were packed into satchels, along with some salt and more bamboo cylinders filled with cold tea. We had just enough time to chase the chill out of our limbs by the cook fires. Then Gaspar had us take up the cylinders and the satchels, and he led us out into the mountains. I had never noticed when the other monks left on the pilgrimage of secret meditation that they were carrying so much food. And with all this food, much more than we could eat in the 4 or 5 days we were gone, why had Joshua and I been training for this by fasting? Traveling higher into the mountains was actually easier for a while, as the snow had been blown off the trail. It was when we came to the high plateaus, where the yak grazed and the snow drifted, that the going became difficult. We took turns at the head of the line, plowing a trail through the snow. As we climbed, the air became so thin that even the highly conditioned monks had to stop frequently to catch their breaths. At the same time, the wind bit through our robes and leggings as if they weren't there, that there was not enough air to breathe. Yet the movement of the air would chill our bones, I suppose is ironic. Yet I was having a hard time appreciating it even then. I said, "Why couldn't you just go to the rabbis and learn to be the Messiah like everyone else? Do you remember any snow in the story of Moses?" "No." "Did the Lord appear to Moses in the form of a snowbank?" "I don't think so." "Did Elijah ascend to heaven on a chariot of ice?" "Nope." "Did Daniel come forth unharmed from a blizzard?" "No." "Our people are about fire, Joshua, not ice. I don't remember any snow in all of the Torah. The Lord probably doesn't even go to places where it snows. This is a huge mistake. We never should have come. We should go home as soon as this is over. And in conclusion, I can't feel my feet." I was out of breath and wheezing. "Daniel didn't come forth from the fire," Joshua said calmly. "Well, who can blame him? It was probably warm in there." "He came forth unharmed from the lion's den," said Josh. "Here," said Gaspar, stopping any further discussion. He put down his parcels and sat down. "Where?" I said. We were under a low overhang, out of the wind, and mostly out of the snow, but it was hardly what you could call shelter. Still, the other monks, including Joshua, shed their packs and sat, affecting the meditation posture, and holding their hands in the mudra of all-giving compassion, which, strangely enough, is the same hand gesture that modern people use for okay. Makes you think. "We can't be here. There's no here here," I said. "Exactly," said Gaspar. "Contemplate that." So I sat.